Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. 1 year ago today, Kabul fell to the Taliban. It marked the chaotic end to 20 years of war and American occupation of Afghanistan, the longest war the United States has ever fought. Zainullah Zaki, he goes by Zach for short, he and Tom Schumann formed a lasting friendship over 16 months of the deadliest fighting of that entire war. Zach was an Afghan interpreter for the U.S. military, Tom, a platoon commander with the 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines. Together, they've just published a new book. It's called Always Faithful, a story of the war in Afghanistan, the fall of Kabul, and the unshakable bond between a Marine and an interpreter. And Zach joins us today from San Antonio, Texas. Zainullah Zaki, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, ma'am, for having me.
And Major Tom Schumann with us from Chicago, Illinois. Major Schumann, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Can you first tell us the story of the first time you and Zach actually met each other in Afghanistan?
Sure. It was beginning of October 2010. We were headed out on a patrol, and up to that point, I'd had a few other interpreters. Most of them were quitting because of how dangerous it was in Afghanistan at the time. And the only ones who were left usually either didn't speak English or didn't speak the local dialect of Pashto. So right off the bat, I saw Zach, healthy, young, fit guy who clearly had a solid command of English and knew the local dialect. And so we immediately connected just based on his competency or proficiency at being a translator. That was kind of the initial connection there. I was just happy to have someone who would go out on patrol, could interpret, and I wouldn't have to worry about him becoming a liability. So that was the initial impression.
Yeah. And what were the conditions like in the location you were deployed to at the time, in terms of the intensity of the fighting or the number of times you needed to be in contact with locals? Tell us a little bit more about what you were experiencing and the kinds of things you were there for, you knew that your interpreter might experience.
Sure. It was the most violent, kinetic, deadly place in the world at that time, Helmand Province, Sangin District, Afghanistan. The IED threat, improvised explosive device, you can think of a mine, was intense. Every time you took a step, you thought, maybe this will be the last time I put this foot down. Best case scenario, if I put this foot down, I won't have a leg. Likely scenario, I won't be alive. And that's what we were thinking every time. We were patrolling and fighting through minefields with the enemy ambushing us every time we went out. And so it was extremely violent, extremely kinetic, but we also had a responsibility to provide security for the local people there. And so we would go out and engage with the villagers. I was also working with the Afghan army. So that's where, you know, the interpreter comes in each day is to help me understand what's going on in the village. He also helps me read the human terrain. He helps me understand the cultural nuances. And so when I'm going into a village, Zach's able to see things that I wouldn't see from my perspective based on his cultural understanding from being from the country. So he's there to actually literally translate, but also he provided a lot more depth than just simply translating. Mm-hmm.
Well, Zach, let me ask you, what made you decide to want to become a translator for the United States military?
The first, when American landed in Afghanistan 2001, after 9/11, they come to our province where I'm living, and they when they landed, there was a FOB next to our house, and they start helping people, and they start making governmental buildings, the government offices, and start building the schools, and start giving books, notebooks, pens to the children in the streets, on the roads, and they throw it from their Conway to the kids, and so they can go to school. That's why I decided to go to school and learn English and help our partners who was the U.S. Military or U.S. troops in Afghanistan to come help us. That's why I decided to go to help them so they can help us better than they can do right now. They needed a language translator, and that's why I decided to work side by side with them, and just also for the future of my country.
Zach, in 2001, late 2001, early 2002, when the United States first went into Afghanistan, how old were you?
I was 11 years old when the American come. And as I said, there was a pub next to our house. When after school, we come from school, we help American. I don't was translator. I learned like at that time, and I go there and help them out whatever they need, because there was military. They was in the pub and they cannot go out. And if whatever they need, they call us, and we just provide whatever they need. We bring it to them to the pub. And after, like in 2010, there was an examination for the interpreters to hire some interpreters, one of the company. And I went to that pub and just joined that examination, and I get passed in it.
I see. And so you were, what, 18, 19 years old at the time?
Yeah. At the time, I was 18, almost 18 year old when I take the examination. Uh-huh. And I get passed. And that's they just deploy me to the Helmand.
Yeah. I asked that, Zach, because, you know, many of us here in the United States have sort of lost contact or lost a sense of perspective of how long the U.S. military was involved in Afghanistan. So hearing that you were 11 when the military first arrived, and that you were 18, 19 when you took that examination to become a translator, we're talking about, you know, half your life already. And so then you were sent to Helmand Province, and was Major Schumann the first Marine you worked with?
Yeah, when they sent me, there was a big camp, it's called Leatherneck, and they took us there. Then another pub in Sangin District called Pub Noli. And then they said there's a team, there's a unit, like a platoon, it's called First Platoon, and they doesn't have interpreter. I think at that time some of the interpreter quit because of the dangerous place, because the place was too dangerous, ID and ambushes, and the interpreters, they cannot stay up to put their life in the risk. So they sent me to the pub increment where my platoon was, 1st Platoon, 3rd Battalion, 3-5. And I went there and met Major Tom Schumann. At the first time in pub increment.
Yeah. So, Zach, you know how I asked Major Schumann what he thought of you when he first met you. What did you think of him when you first met Tom?
Yeah, when my POC just introduced me to Tom, he was a lieutenant, and the POC told me, you're going to go with the 1st Platoon, Lieutenant Schumann, to the patrol this morning. And then I met him, when I saw him, he looked very good behavior, and looks a very nice person, and I just get happy. So some of the commanders and the platoon commanders, they were very, very, like, angry people, and piss off all the time, and so when I see him, he was very good, a smile on the face, and very nice person, and I like it. That's why I stay in very danger and accept everything for my team, for my were my platoon commander, and I stayed along. And when they left, I just quit there. I come to my province, get another job with the Army.
Well, yeah. so you know, the reason why I asked you both that same sort of first impression question is that it seems to me that at the bedrock of a successful relationship between any member of the U.S. military and an interpreter, especially in a place like Afghanistan, is trust, right? Like exactly. Major Schumann, you had to be able to trust Zach. And Zach also had to be able to trust you, especially given the circumstances under which this deployment was taking place, Major Schumann, as you described. I mean, your battalion, if I remember correctly, lost more people than, what, any other during the entire 20-year war?
Correct. It was the bloodiest battle. I would also offer that we killed more Taliban than any other battalion. But when it comes to trust, I think trust is the oxygen for any relationship to grow or prosper. So it becomes particularly important to have that trust when it's a life or death situation. So yes, trust is always essential for relationships. It's particularly important when you're in combat. Mm.
So can you tell me a little bit more about the kind of situation that that you and Zach were in? We've just unfortunately got about 30 seconds before the first break, so I'll let you get started. But I understand that what Zach had been with the first platoon for just 4 days, and there had already been, several firefights?
In the first 100 days, we were in 100 firefights. So every single day we went outside, we were fighting.
Okay. Well, we're going to hear more about some specific instances within those first 100 days when we come back. We're joined today by Major Tom Schumann. He is a Marine and was a former platoon commander in the 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines in Helmand Province for 16 months. During that time, he worked with Zainullah Zaki, an interpreter for the 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines. Together, they have written a book called Always Faithful, a story of the war in Afghanistan, the fall of Kabul, and the unshakable bond between a Marine and an interpreter. More in a moment. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And today we're joined by Major Tom Schumann and Zainullah Zaki. He goes by Zach. Together, they've written a book. It's called Always Faithful, a story of the war in Afghanistan, the fall of Kabul, and the unshakable bond between a Marine and an interpreter. Zach and Major Schumann, I'd love to hear more stories about some of the pivotal moments that the two of you experienced together, especially during those, as you said, those first 100 days, Major Schumann. So Zach, in the book, there's a story about one of your first encounters with danger as you're sort of out in the field with the platoon, when I believe there's a firefight of some kind going on and everyone dropped to the ground except you. You had stood there. You were frozen momentarily. Can you tell us that story, Zach?
Before this job, I've been with one of the construction company in my province, and they were in very dangerous place. They call that a valley, dead valley. It's a Kranga valley in a Kunar province, and the Taliban come very close to the Upis and fight with the Afghan National Army and also U.S. I were very familiar with the gunshots, fire, and bombs and these things, RPGs. So when I get there, when I get to the Helmand and join the 1st Platoon and the 1st Patrol, Somebody attack us. This is part on us from a distance. Our team, all the members, just lay down on the ground, and I were looking for the person who did it, and to find that place who from where they attack us. So, kind of pros, and also looking for the enemy to show to. My teammate, and just target him and make him destroy it. That was the point I did.
Well, what did you learn in that moment then?
Yeah, then when it happens, one of our team doctor, the medic, he just grabbed me in my body armor from the back and said, "Lay down, man. You're gonna get die." And then I learned it then after we get ambushed, and then we did same with all the Marine did it. Then I learned it, keep myself safe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Major Schumann, there's another story in the book, because you had talked a moment ago about how many IEDs and mines there were in almost every place that you went. And you write about in the book about how there was a moment where I think the platoon was moving forward in a particular direction, but there was a detection of some Taliban communications, radio communications, in preparation for an ambush of your platoon. Can you tell us that story?
Sure. The platoon was moving from farm fields that we were patrolling through towards a village. These village, it's difficult, I think, to kind of picture what these villages look like, because they're just a cluster of 10 to 12 mud huts, but you know, maybe 50, 100 people live in one of these villages. And as we were approaching the village, we were maybe 100 meters from the village, and we were monitoring the Taliban's radio traffic. Zach had a little radio that he could hear what they were saying. And as we approached the village, he could hear them saying, "Start the ambush, get ready to start the ambush." And he turned to me and said, "You know, they're saying they're setting up the ambush, and you need to hurry up because they haven't got everybody in place yet. So if you hurry up, you can stop them." But the issue is that you've got, you know, this young Marine, this 18-year-old Marine out in front of the patrol who is walking through that minefield at the front. And so that we all walk in single file line behind that person to mitigate the threat. And that person up front has a mine detector, a metal detector that they're sweeping. It actually wasn't very effective. That's part of the reason we hit so many of those. But you can't ask that person who's proofing a minefield to go faster. And I said, "I can't make him go any faster than he is. He's already, you know, very dangerous job." And Zach took it on his own initiative and said, "Well, can't wait any longer. They're going to start the ambush." And he sprinted through this area that was an uncleared minefield that we knew that there was several dozen, you know, more IEDs and mines in this area. And he sprints through that field into the village, and he's able to correlate where the traffic was coming from, where the command and control was coming from, and he enters the compound that he knew the Taliban commander was directing the ambush, and is able to tackle and detain that guy as the rest of the platoon follows him into the village.
And Major Schumann, what did you think when Zach did that, when he made that sprint?
Well, we thought he was crazy, but I think it was one of many examples where it was clear that Zach was there to do so much more than just translate, that he was there to fight alongside us. And he went from someone who, you know, worked for the platoon to kind of just becoming another member of the platoon. And it was clear that he was willing to share the same risks, the same danger, and at times even more so than the rest of the platoon there. And so he was fighting for his country too. And it was clear. And that kind of courage really gained all our respect and our appreciation. And he ultimately became one of us.
Yeah. Well, Zach, you didn't have to do that, right? I mean, as a translator, you did not have to sprint ahead of the sort of mine detecting equipment and tackle a Taliban radio operator. So what were you thinking when you did that? How did you make that decision in that split second to take that risk?
Yeah, everything was about all that, the peaceful world, the peaceful Afghanistan, the tourists, and, you know, I accept the risk because they're killing our people. They're killing our partners, the U.S. troops. They come to help us and rebuild our country. And I stand up to go and fight against them. So, everywhere they kill innocent people. They brass bomb in the street, on the ways, on the roads. And they did suicide in the cities, as you guys maybe see in the media, what happened in Afghanistan because of them. That's why I accept our risk to fight against them and to make a peaceful Afghanistan, and especially for the whole world, make a peace and bring a peace to the world. That's why I accept that risk on me.
Mm-hmm. The book, Always Faithful, is full of so many of these very detailed moments when the two of you and the platoon had to make those kinds of decisions in a split second. Tom, there's another story about, again, just the massive presence of those IEDs. You had actually been knocked out by one, and Zach stayed with you. Can you tell us that story?
Sure. It was November 9th. It was the day that started with Robert Kelly, a friend of mine, being killed, a great, great Marine and great man. And one of my Marines had been injured, and some of us went out to go help. And when we went to go alleviate some pressure with the squad that had the injured Marine, we got them back to base. But when we started to go back to base, we got ambushed. And during that ambush, my squad leader, Sergeant Trey Humphrey, stepped on IED and it blew up my platoon sergeant, Tim Henley, and myself. So all three of us kind of were in the same blast. And when I regained consciousness, you know, I see Zach is there holding security, trying to make sure, protect me. And then I look up and I saw my squad leader, who was missing his leg, and then I saw my platoon sergeant was extremely concussed, couldn't stand up. I noticed that Corporal Leahy had stepped up and taken command of the control and control of the squad seamlessly. And it was just one of the worst moments of my life, that two guys who I loved, my sergeant, my squad leader, my platoon sergeant, were both injured. But it's also one of those moments where you see the worst in combat, in that it's, you see the horrors and the maiming of these young guys. But then as we're carrying Sergeant Humphrey off the battlefield, Zach's helping us carry the stretcher, I'm carrying the stretcher, and he keeps turning towards me and saying, sir, I know I'm heavy, you could put me down. And he keeps encouraging the people that are carrying the stretcher with him to put him down, and he's saying, you guys need a rest. Sergeant Humphrey would go on to die on the helicopter and need to be resuscitated. He'd die twice in flight. And to think that in the moments preceding his death, his thoughts were with everyone else. They weren't with him. And that's, this is what this book, Always Faithful, this is where it's examples like this title comes from, Semper Fidelis. It's people who always put others before themselves, and where else, you see the horrors, but you also see these glimpses of heaven, these glimpses of what true love can mean. And true love is saying, put me down so you can rest, you're my brothers. And in the moments preceding your death, you're only thinking about other people. And so that day was it was a tough one. And Zach, like every other day, was right there when I regained consciousness, and he was right there looking out after me.
Hmm. Well, Zach, can you tell us what you experienced that day from, your point of view? Because you obviously, you saw the IED go off.
Yes. Yeah, that was Most of the time it was war, you know, and IEDs. Everybody didn't think he gonna come back alive or without. Maybe he doesn't have a leg after this patrol. Or that day, we all was mad, and I didn't think I am Afghan, and I'm not like a soldier, or not, I'm not a part of these people who do I work with. You know, I just think like same Marine, same soldier. Because I was just coming into the war field, and when I saw my friends, our unit members, like all the soldier, die, injured, blew up, we all didn't feel well, and we met sad for a long time. I still remember that brushing and shooting when I get up in the morning, and the whistling of the bullets in my mind in the morning, early in the morning. And whenever I remind that our people killed my friend, it's make me cry, you know.
And when you say our people, you mean your fellow members of the platoon?
Exactly, and all the Afghans.
And all the Afghans, yeah.
Thousands of Afghans are killed, and still no peace. They don't have food. They don't have government. Everything is gone. We lost everything.
I was going to wait until later to ask this question, Zach, but I hope you can forgive me if I ask it now. You're exactly right about the current situation, right, in Afghanistan. There's a famine. Do you think your efforts, Major Schumann's efforts, the lives of the Marines that we just talked about, of the Afghans we just talked about, was it all worth it?
Yes, it is. You know that we made a lot of sacrifices, both American and Afghans, American troops, Afghan National Army, Afghan police. We hope we're going to make a brighter Afghanistan, a peaceful Afghanistan. But now it's just gone. It's just wasteless. You know, that were the sacrifice of the young soldiers of Americans, the young people and young soldiers of Afghan National Armies, the police, and also the locals which just get sacrificed themselves in that war. That's like a couple decades, and this is just... I don't know. I don't have answer for that. Mm. The people, the senior people who was involved in this war and the mission of Afghanistan. That's I don't know. I don't have any answer for that. What was it, Bar?
Mm-hmm. You know, Zach, I think that's actually the most eloquent answer I've heard to that question. That you don't have an answer to that question.
Exactly. Exactly.
Major Schumann, what would you say to that?
I think Zach, you know, he initially said yes, it was. And for a moment in time, girls were in school. For a moment in time, there was some governance, there was some security for people who had never had those opportunities. I think that question, was it worth it, was answered in full by the men who laid their lives and limbs on that battlefield that, yes, in that moment, it was worth it to them. Their answers have a permanence. Their answer echoes for eternity. And so I think the question has to be reframed to a different audience. Because clearly we went there, we fought, and we bled, and we did what our countries asked us to do. And that's what Marines, that's what our allies have always done, is we've gone where our nation has sent us, and we fought, and we won the battles. Was it worth it is a collective question for the American public to answer.
Well, Major Tom Schuman and Zainul Lazaki, stand by for just a moment. We're talking about their experiences in Afghanistan as Marine and interpreter. They share those experiences in the new book, Always Faithful. More in a moment. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are joined by Major Tom Schuman. He's a platoon commander with the 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines. And Zainula, a.k.a. Zach Zaki, also joins us. He served as an interpreter during the Afghan War, and together they've written a new book. It's called Always Faithful, a story of the war in Afghanistan, the fall of Kabul, and the unshakable bond between a Marine and an interpreter. There's a couple of more stories in the book that I would love to hear from both of you. And then, if it's all right with both, with you, Major Schuman, and with you, Zach, I want to return to sort of these bigger questions a little later in the show, because the two of you are uniquely positioned to help us as the American people think through those questions. But first of all, Zach, at what point did your relationship with Major Schuman evolve from, you know, interpreter and Marine to a friendship? When did you start considering him a friend?
Yeah, well, when we start work together and I joined the 1st Platoon, the area and the situation was a very worse, dangerous. Every moment of our life was in danger, peer of death, and the friendship we made it, and we still keep our promises, and we still help each other. We protect each other, and we care about each other, and you know, I didn't think we are like different people or come from different places. We think like same because we are we're in same field of update, same field of war, and we just take care of each other, care about each other, and we protect each other. Tom Schuman, he just take care of me very well, behave me very well, all the time. Protect me, and he didn't protect himself that much. Like he care about me. Mm-hmm. That's why we keep our friendship that long. And
you know, because I asked that because a little earlier, Major Schuman really rightly pointed out that not only were you, the two of you, side by side, I mean, working with the platoon on the various day-to-day missions, but also because you had to interact and you, Zach, had to provide interpretation when the platoon was working with the Afghan people, it seems to me that it would, you also had to not only interpret Tom's words, right, when you're speaking with a villager or a fellow Afghan, but also his tone, his mood, his expressions, and like the really the intent, the real purpose of what he was trying to get across to the Afghan people you interacted. How, what was that like for you?
The, you know, as I said, we, when we join and go to the villages, talk to the people, communicate with the people, find out and just work for a better situation in the area and just destroy the enemy. And, you know, that, that point, we just promise each other and we just care about each other. And, you know, that make me to protect my teammate, to protect all the Marines, and also they just take care about me and protect me all the time. And they just care about my religion, where was my prayer time. They, you know, they tell me to just, that's your prayer time, just do your prayer, and they make security for me, to keep me safe so I can do my friend safe area.
Well, Major Schumann, I'm curious about your, how you experienced those moments when Zach was providing interpretation between you and the Afghan people that you encountered, because I think you write in the book a little bit about how Zach often, or at least at some times, sort of provided a means to temper the interactions, that they may have been extremely, understandably, very tense and high stress, but Zach was providing more than just sort of word-for-word interpretation.
Sure, he was often mediating while interpreting, and, you know, it, rather than have to just say these words and then explicitly state one word, then the next word, then the next word, so that Zach can translate them. Like you mentioned, he understood the spirit or the intent of what I was trying to communicate, which, as a platoon commander, I've got, you know, 35 Marines out there fighting. I've got higher headquarters calling me on the radio. I've got aircraft in the area, artillery, bad guys trying to add friction into my plan. And so to not have to sit there and supervise every word that is being communicated, frees me up to kind of focus outwardly on the several other variables that are requiring my attention. And so when we go into the village and I tell Zach as we walk up, hey, here's what I want to happen, or here's what I want communicated, and then I just know that that part is taken care of. We call it a fire and forget weapon. It's nice to know that, that he's got it for action, and that he is going to make sure that not only is he going to tell me what the people are literally saying, he's going to read the situation from a cultural perspective and provide some of these nuances that, that I wouldn't understand otherwise. And so the value of that is it's immense. And so, it was a huge help.
Well, thinking back towards the formation of the friendship between the two of you, I'm guessing that as platoon commander, there were certain things or maybe struggles that you had in your own mind that you probably wouldn't be able to or wouldn't want to share with the people under your command. But were you able to share those with Zach because he was, you know, serving a different function in the platoon?
Sure. As the platoon commander, you never complain down. You never bring your problems or your burdens down on your troops. Instead, you're a buffer. You're a dam. You hold the water between higher headquarters, who has their own things coming down the pipe, and then you've got your troops bubbling up. So you've got the bottom-up pressure, and you've got top-down pressure, and then you stand there in that gap as that junior officer, as that platoon commander, and try to keep those pressures of those two worlds separate. And then, of course, you have your own issues, whether it's, you just lost your best friend or whatever internal strife that you may have as a person. And so to have an outlet where you can unburden yourself, where you can, relay some of these frustrations or worries or anxieties, it's extremely, it was the only thing that kept me sane. It's a little bastion of sanity to be able to talk to Zach and to be able to vent because there's so much pressure coming down from higher, and there's so much pressure. You've got 35, 18 to 22-year-olds who have their own lives and issues and challenges going on, and then, of course, you have an enemy who's trying to kill you every day. And so you stir all that up and put it in a pot. It's in one person is kind of trying to hold it all together as the platoon commander. It's tough, but thankfully I had Zach to be able to lament to and to voice my concerns.
Well, in the book you write about how you had increasing doubts over time about whether the sort of strategy that was in play at the time, especially in Helmand Province, was working. Did having Zach there as your little bastion of sanity, as you just said, sort of help you through especially that time?
Sure. I went there with all the hopes and dreams of drinking tea and this cultural kind of an awakening where everyone would say, we're in with the U.S. And that's kind of how I've been trained up to that point, is that this counterinsurgency tactics where you win hearts and minds and then everybody, wants democracy and your freedom. And that's not what I found. Everyone just wanted to shoot us or try to kill us in the area that we were in. And so, it was definitely disappointing, frustrating, and to be able to talk to Zach about what kind of tactics or strategies are we using here in Helmand, in this province. He would say that some of these people in Helmand are saying they're just never going to buy into what you're selling, and really the only thing they understand is violence. And fortunately, we were pretty good at that too. So, but he was again critical in that moment.
Yeah. So Zach, as your friendship between Major Schumann and you, it sounds, got deeper and deeper. Did you ever feel like that you could tell him, like, that maybe there were just some things about the Afghan people that Americans didn't understand, and that it's not just a cultural gap, but that Americans, perhaps even including Major Schumann, didn't understand what it was like to be on the receiving end of an invading military? I mean, did you feel like you could? Did you think that? And also, did you share those thoughts with him?
Yeah, every region and every country and every people, they have their own religions and all the cultural stuff. So yeah, some of the thing and the cultures, our team and Major Tom, they don't know because they were not Afghan. So I was there. I teach them. I teach my team. I show them a lot of the accents, a lot of the thing. Hello, how are you? Stop. Hold on. Just stay there. In our language, so they can understand, and they didn't hurt innocent people, and they didn't kill innocent people. I teach them all the culture to my team. When they go to home, what they're gonna do. What they don't like to do with the Afghan people. This is the culture, and that thing is in the culture. This is not in the cultures. Yeah, I show to my team everything. When we went to patrol, and we had a briefing meeting, and we explained everything, and where we going, what we're doing, and they explain all that. The missions and whatever they need me or what they ask me, like what we gonna do, how we come and go into the house to search it. What should we do? And I teach them, you guys gotta do this, 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 and we did all this.
Yeah. Well, we're rounding towards the conclusion of this conversation. And I want to come back to what we touched on before, because I think, again, we as a nation must engage with this question or this series of questions. So, Zach, you know, you heard Major Schumann say that at least for a time, there was this feeling of hope and possibility in Afghanistan with the temporary fall of the Taliban, women and girls going to school, somewhat liberalization of the government. And I suppose that it makes a lot of emotional sense that that kind of hope, that seed of hope, is worth the effort. But it came at that, planting that little seed came at such a terrible, terrible cost, right? Not only to the the men and women in the United States military, but again, the 10 and 100-fold more Afghans who died. And now the country is back where it was 20 years ago. So
exactly.
What do you think now, if anything, the U.S. owes to the Afghan people in order to make, to get that hope perhaps to persist and to last at the very least?
Yeah, as I said, you know, the American and the international community, they did very well in Afghanistan. They started a government foundation in Afghanistan. They made a good government, and also the schools for the girls, for the boys. But unfortunately, I don't know, in the end, the situation is get worse. As an interpreter, as an Afghan, I didn't wish like that way. So I didn't hope about right now what's going on in Afghanistan. We didn't fight for that. We didn't hope about this. We just fight for a peaceful Afghanistan and peaceful world, not like the situation right now. Before 20 years, like, the 20-year sacrifications, and after 20 years, still like turn to same time where it was. I don't know. I don't have answer for that because I was just interpreter, you know, and just a ordinary Afghan, and this is all about U.S. government, the senior and our Afghan and the international and NATO.
Yeah. Well, Zach, I have to say I actually appreciate your restraint, because you could have at the very least said the U.S. government could finally issue you a special immigrant visa, which I understand you still don't have. Is that right?
Yeah. I don't have like visa for a long time. I have a federal, and it's for 2 years. It is 1 year is gone and just 1 year left. But if it is like complete, like 1 year more complete, maybe they're gonna deport us, and or what they're gonna do with us. But you know, I don't know what's gonna happen to our case. My case is denied. 2021 in March, and we appealed again, and it still have a response for that. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, Zainullah Zaki and Major Tom Schumann, together they wrote Always Faithful, a story of the war in Afghanistan, the fall of Kabul, and the unshakable bond between a Marine and an interpreter. Thank you both. This is On Point.